This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Early this morning, President Trump released what he calls a budget blueprint to make America great again. Reaction was swift, and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders had a strong one. In a written statement, Sanders called the Trump budget, quote, morally obscene and bad economic policy. More people are tuning in to what Bernie Sanders has to say on these matters since his meteoric rise to national prominence during the 2016 presidential campaign. He may not have won the Democratic primary, but Sanders certainly has won some concessions from Democrats and even a leadership position in the party. That despite the fact that he's not officially a Democrat. But what has Sanders' increased visibility on the national scene meant for his constituents in Vermont? Today and tomorrow, the senator is making a packed trip through the state, stopping for visits at various locations around Vermont, and holding two general town hall meetings. His presence at these kinds of events in Vermont has become rarer since his run for president. But do Vermonters mind? Today on the program, we're going to look at the role Bernie Sanders plays in national politics and what that means for Vermonters. Joining me first today from the Politico newsroom in Arlington, Virginia, is someone who's looked at how Bernie Sanders fits into the big picture in national politics. Gabriel DiBenedetti is a national political reporter for Politico. Gabe, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So Bernie Sanders has been in Washington for a long time now. You know, he was a representative for 16 years before he became Vermont's junior senator, and he's been a senator for 10 years. Can you give us a little insight into how he was perceived in Washington prior to this presidential run and compare it to how people are looking at him now?
Yeah. Well, you framed it right. Let's be clear that he was around in Washington for a long time, but no one would exactly call him the consummate insider. He was for a long time viewed as, you know, by other Democratic House members and then senators, of course, as someone who, you know, was sort of off to the side doing his own thing. That's just Bernie being Bernie was sort of a thing that a lot of them would say. They liked working with him, but they didn't particularly, need his participation in a lot of their ventures. And some of them were happy to welcome it, but he was not a central part of the Democratic Party leadership. Now, however, he still is not sort of a central member of the party, but he's someone who everyone in the party has to listen to. He is now formally in the party leadership. He is on people's minds at all times because he is essentially the only Democratic senator, more or less, who has a national following that's basically ready to follow him no matter what.
And are they really? I mean, do you see that people are willing to follow Bernie Sanders and therefore if Democrats get him on their side, people are willing to follow the Democrats?
Well, that is sort of the big open question that a lot of Democrats are trying to figure out right now. There's no doubt at all that he is someone who is able to command lots and lots of voters all over the country to follow him, to hear what he has to say. But what a lot of other senators are trying to figure out, and a lot of other Democratic members of Democratic leadership in the party are trying to figure out, is whether that can translate to anything other than support for Bernie Sanders himself in his presidential bid.
So can you describe actually what Bernie Sanders' role is in Senate Democratic leadership? I mean, people seem to forget, including some national journalists, that Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat. He's an independent. So what is his role in the Democratic Party?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's actually a bit of a point of tension with other Democrats. They won't really say it out loud, but a lot of folks quietly say among themselves, well, if you're trying to, you know, figure out the future of the Democratic Party, it would be nice if you were a member of it. But in terms of his actual role in Senate Democratic leadership, he's working with the leader, Chuck Schumer, to try and help the party, you know, with its messaging, try to help the party move forward in a way that works for the party nationally, because obviously the Democratic Party is not in a very good position countrywide right now. And he's trying to make the case to his fellow Democratic senators, if you follow the path that I took during my presidential race and the path that I'm now prescribing, maybe the party can get back on track. And that's a lot of messaging, a lot of working with Schumer to try and set up events all around the country for his fellow senators. Remains to be seen what this is actually going to look like, though, once the midterms get closer.
Well, has Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer drunk the Bernie Sanders Kool-Aid? I mean, Bernie Sanders is working with Senator Schumer a lot, but how's that relationship going?
Well, you know, they've actually been close for a while. They're not necessarily the best of friends, but they have been able to work together in the past. And I think a lot of Democratic senators are very happy to let Chuck Schumer be the point person on the relationship with Bernie Sanders. Now, it's important to remember that Sanders is actually much closer with Harry Reid, who was Schumer's predecessor, but they're working together pretty well so far. We haven't seen any major blow-ups where Bernie Sanders has broken from the rest of the party or the rest of the caucus, and that's what a lot of people were quite worried about after he came back from his presidential bid, obviously feeling pretty empowered. And let's remember that after the campaign of 2016, there are probably only two people in the country who are in much better position politically than they were before it, and that's Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. You can't really make the case about anyone else who ran. And the other thing to remember, though, is that there was only one other senator who endorsed him during the campaign. So it's not exactly as if he has a room full of natural allies.
I'm talking with Gabriel DiBenedetti, national political reporter for Politico, and we're looking at how Bernie Sanders fits into the Democratic Party in Washington. Listeners, if you have thoughts on Bernie Sanders and his national role in politics, and you want to compare it to what you see as his Vermont role or how you see a change, or if you care that he's more focused on national politics right now, seemingly, than Vermont politics, you can also post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. VT Guy says, I don't mind that Senator Sanders has continued to speak to more national audiences since his presidential run. The reason I don't mind is simply because his message hasn't changed from when he was unknown. He still cares deeply about the same issues he always had, the same issues which we reelect him for time after time. Again, share your perspective. Go to vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition, and you can post a note there. Gabe, you mentioned that quietly some Democrats are grousing that, you know, here's this guy telling the Democrats what to do and he's not even a D. So is that likely to sort of foment or ferment to the point where Democrats are more likely to say it out loud? Or are they just feeling like, you know, Bernie Sanders has this popular sentiment behind him and we better keep quiet?
Yeah, I don't know if any of them necessarily feel, it's not as if this is bubbling to the surface and a lot of them are sort of going to sleep at night saying, you know, darn that Bernie. But a lot of them do feel as if, you know, they have been in the Senate just as long as he has, they've been in Washington for just as long as he has, and he's not a member of their party, but he's now seen as a leading voice for that party. I don't think that that's going to come out in the public anytime soon, unless a few things happen. One thing is there is some worry among some of the more conservative Democrats or centrist Democrats who are running for re-election in 2018 that Sanders could, if he doesn't, you know, necessarily ask for a primary against them, which he has no indication of, you know, moving in that direction, if he doesn't exactly wave his followers away from primarying his colleagues. And the other thing is, you know, if they feel that he is sort of pushing his own agenda instead of that of the party, then you could start to see some of that come to the forefront. But this is all hypothetical. None of this has happened yet.
But it also sounds like Bernie Sanders pushing his agenda is what the Democrats are then making as their agenda in some ways. I mean, he is pushing from the inside. And so isn't his agenda now the Democrats' agenda?
On some things, but, let's be clear that Chuck Schumer is still the leader of the party, and Bernie Sanders is not saying to Chuck Schumer, okay, today we're going to talk about this, today we're going to talk about this. What he is trying to do in terms of the party overall is try and move the National Democratic Party in his direction, whether that's, you know, in terms of races all over the country, whether it's in terms of the discussions that need to be happening at the local level. He obviously tried to install one of his close allies at that top of the DNC. But in terms of day-to-day mechanics in the Democratic Party leadership within the Senate, it's not as if he's directing the other senators.
From your perspective, how is Bernie Sanders prioritizing his time? Is it in doing the work of a senator representing his constituents in Vermont, or is it politics and party building and representing and thinking about the country as a whole?
There's no doubt that he is a much, much, much more national figure than he ever was before. He's clearly still doing the work of being a senator from Vermont. You know, you can go to his website and look at all the press releases. He's still doing he's still talking about the same things that he's always been talking about, as the listener earlier alluded to. But the reality is that in terms of the actual time, the public-facing stuff that he's doing, a lot of it is much more national than before. He went to Mississippi recently to work on a unionization drive. Mississippi's pretty far from Vermont. There aren't necessarily a lot of people saying out loud, well, you should be focusing more on the people of Vermont right now. But the reality is that he is in high demand for other Democrats all around the country. People want him to visit them.
So do you have any sense then about what this may portend for the next presidential election season?
We don't know yet if he's going to run. He would be by far the oldest serious candidate if he did run. But the reality is that he's put himself in a position to be a serious power broker for the party, whether or not he decides to run in 2020. And it's far too early to see what the political landscape's even going to look like. But there's no doubt that there are very few people in the party, maybe Barack Obama and Bill Clinton are the only ones, maybe Joe Biden, that have the ability to, you know, really command the same number of people behind them and that other Democratic leaders feel that they're going to have to listen to.
That's Gabriel DiBenedetti, national political reporter for Politico. He joined us from the Politico newsroom in Arlington, Virginia. Gabe, it was a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
We are talking today about Bernie Sanders as he makes a big swing through Vermont this week. And we're examining his role in national politics and if or how his rise to national prominence has changed his focus or impacted his constituents here in Vermont. And we're getting some thoughts from you today as we continue this conversation. Amber says the country needs more of Bernie, and I am willing to share. Christina says, I hold Senator Sanders in high regard, and I'm happy that we've been able to share him with the nation. When I first told distant friends about his presidential ambitions, they ridiculed me. Now, most of those friends believe that he was our best choice. And Kenji says, Vermonters, your votes moved Bernie up through the mayor's office in Burlington, the House, to the Senate, so now he can be useful to the rest of us across the country. Thanks from California. Then again, Russell has a dissenting voice. He says, it's time for him to just fade away. And we're going to continue talking about this. We're looking at Bernie Sanders' role. And let's go to our other guests for this hour. Former Vermont AP reporter David Graham, who's here with me in Montpelier today. Hi, Dave.
Hi there.
And congressional reporter Scott Detrow from NPR, who joins us from Washington, actually from NPR's radio booth at the U.S. Senate. Scott, it's a pleasure to have you on the program today.
Hey, great to be here.
So regardless of what his future political goals are, and Gabe DiBenedetti punted on that, as we all must, because we don't know, Sanders does currently have an ability certainly to mobilize a base of supporters on issues or causes that are important. And Scott, I'm going to come to you first, because even before the inauguration of Donald Trump, Senator Sanders actually played a pretty big role in getting Americans out for this day of action that the Democrats had put in place, which was supposed to rally people against the repeal of Obamacare, which we're, of course, hearing so much about right now. Can you talk a little bit about the role that Bernie Sanders played in that day of action?
Yeah, this was just on the eve of President Trump's inauguration. The weekend beforehand, Bernie Sanders organized rallies across the country. He worked with other congressional leaders to put it together. But it was basically his idea, and it was the first big test of the big email network that Sanders built up by running a presidential campaign and bringing so many, you know, small money donors into the fold. So they did rallies all across the country to kind of boost support for Obamacare. I went to the one in Warren, Michigan, which was really interesting because it was Bernie Sanders and it was Chuck Schumer. So you have the top Democrat in the country. Well, I guess he wasn't at the point in time because President Obama was still president. But Chuck Schumer, you know, in the Trump era, is the top Democrat in the country. And he was sharing the stage with Bernie Sanders. And he was basically the warm-up act. Sanders was actually a little delayed because of travel getting there. So Schumer was speaking on stage, and all of a sudden Bernie Sanders walks up on the stage and the crowd interrupts Schumer and goes crazy for Sanders. And I thought that was kind of a symbolic moment. But the location that they were at was interesting, too, because they were in Warren, Michigan, a county that saw a huge shift that had voted for President Obama in 2012, but went very hard for Donald Trump in 2016. And in fact, more than made up for the margin that Trump won the state of Michigan by and was basically responsible for giving him that state. So it was interesting that they picked that location, because the argument that Sanders seemed to be making was that if we talk about the economy, if we focus on populist economic issues, we can win these voters back.
Is it mostly, though, just for gathering people that senators and Democrats in Washington are finding Sanders useful for? Because, you know, as you're pointing out, he can gather a crowd. But are there other ways where he's powerful right now and where Democrats are able to work with him or sort of use his powers to their advantage?
Yeah, it's tough to say because, you know, they're the minority party, so much of what they do in the Capitol right now is defensive. You know, it's not like they're crafting policies that can seriously make their way to the president's desk at this point in time. But Sanders clearly does, you know, push the Democrats to the left on a lot of issues. You saw that dynamic play out over the course of the campaign, and I think you saw it again on a smaller scale with the DNC race. The fact that he endorsed Keith Ellison so quickly, I think, really made Keith Ellison the serious candidate to beat. He ultimately lost by a very close margin to Tom Perez, who had served in the Obama administration. But Sanders backing and then Schumer following up Sanders so quickly made Ellison a prime contender. And I think says a lot about how much Democrats are looking to Sanders to kind of set a direction for the party, even though, as we've pointed out a few times already, and we'll point out several more times, you know, he's not actually a Democrat.
Dave Graham, we have certainly heard this sort of fire and passion and message from Bernie Sanders in Vermont for a very long time. I mean, even before he was a representative in Washington, he was very active in Vermont politics. Burlingtonians will remember him back, you know, more than 30 years now. So, you know, there has been a little bit of, depending on how you look at it, either sort of smugness or pride in some Vermonters who watched the country come to this Bernie being Bernie idea and seeing his personality and his message emerge. Do you think that the power he currently holds in Washington is in some way the fulfillment of what his followers in Vermont have always believed?
I do think that a lot of his followers believe that in Vermont. Bernie Sanders is pretty much an unstoppable phenomenon in this state. I mean, he got 86% of the vote versus Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary just about a year ago this month. And he then he got 18,000 write-in votes in the general election, even though he was asking people please to support Hillary Clinton. And so in Vermont, Bernie is, you know, he has a huge following here of folks who just regard him as you know, something bigger than life. And he, frankly, can pretty much take that for granted, I think. I don't think he has to worry about it at all. He is up for re-election in 2018. I haven't heard of any Republicans being brave enough to step forward and try to challenge him yet, but I suppose that could happen. But even so, you know, he would have just this huge following in Vermont, and he also has a gigantic fundraising potential now around the country. I don't think anybody's going to beat him if he runs for re-election to the Senate in 2018. So there has been a little bit of griping, frankly, a lot from the – mainly really from the Vermont media about the fact that he hasn't held a news conference other than one stop at the Burlington Airport tarmac where he took a couple of questions just after losing the New York primary last year. He hasn't held a scheduled news conference for a couple of years now, and he's been the same is true of the old give and take town meetings that he used to have in the state, where he would go and sort of make some remarks at the beginning and then open it up to questions from the floor. He hasn't been doing that either. Although just this week now, after one columnist was criticizing him over this, he's now having a couple of town meetings tonight and tomorrow night. But and he's having a news conference today, believe it or not, in Brattleboro. So, you know, maybe he is taking some of this criticism to heart and realizing, you know, I do have an election coming up in less than 2 years now, and maybe I need to start paying attention to the home place again. But you know, he does
But do voters care? I mean, I'll speak to that. The last time Bernie Sanders joined us here on Vermont Edition for a live call-in to answer questions from listeners was 2 years ago. It was March of 2015. And mm-hmm. prior to that, he was very available and a frequent guest and frequently answering constituents' phone calls and questions from reporters like me. We've tried repeatedly and we've offered to clear our schedule for him to no avail. So this is a change for him. And it contrasts strongly with Senator Leahy and with Congressman Welch's availability. But do voters care?
I think that you know, you've read some of the comments coming in on the website now, and a lot of folks are saying, you know, particularly his supporters are saying, we're glad to share Bernie with the rest of the country. We get his message, we follow his message, we agree with his message. Go share it with the folks in Mississippi, you know, and try to convince people in Warren, Michigan about it. So I do think that probably if you were to poll a majority of it, or polled his followers in Vermont, and majority of them would say, Bernie, you're doing just fine. So I don't think he really, in terms of his own political strategy and future, has much to worry about in this state. I think that just in terms of the kind of, you know, civic aspect of it or whatever, you do want a senator who's responsive to his constituents and responsive to the media in his or her home state. I think it's a legitimate question for us to ask if we ever do get him. Hey, Senator, if you do run for re-election in 18, are you actually going to be a senator from Vermont, or are you just going to immediately morph into a presidential candidate again, and we'll never see you for a couple more years? I do think that's a legitimate question.
Well, Scott Detrow, from your perspective in Washington politics, what does it matter? You know, if Bernie Sanders seems to be more focused on national politics or more focused on some splashy big media appearances, like a Cruz debate on CNN, talking with Bill Nye, the science guy, does it matter for what he's actually supposed to be doing in Washington?
In terms of how he's handling his job as a senator representing a state, I think that matters a lot more on the Vermont level in terms of whether he's able to be effective in terms of local issues and in terms of local popularity. I think it's not like Bernie Sanders is like an endangered politician in terms of having low local approval levels that you see it sometimes when senators kind of late in their career in Washington focus more on national issues and find themselves scrambling for a close reelection all of a sudden because they haven't focused on local stuff. I mean, I don't think that seems to be the case by any indication at all with Sanders. But yeah, I mean, he's clearly a national figure in the Senate now. He's clearly one of the first people that reporters will go to in the hallway to get a reaction to high-profile events. And I think there aren't that many senators who kind of fit that bill. So he's in a unique club there. You know, you think about John McCain and the way that he established himself as someone like that. After he also lost a presidential primary in 2000, it was a different circumstance because, you know, his party ended up winning the White House. But after that primary run, he kind of became a high profile needle in the side of President Bush going forward and a national figure on defense issues, national security issues. And people always think of that more than, you know, representing Arizona for him. So I think that is the case with Sanders. And he's, on the top three or four Democrats you want to talk to about a big issue, you know, like President Trump's budget that came out today. People want to see how he responded to that.
We're talking today about Bernie Sanders and his role in national politics, and we're going to get to your thoughts, your comments, your feelings, and any questions you might have in just a moment. You can share your perspective with us on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. You're listening to Vermont Edition. Tripod. Have you heard of it? It's about trying podcasts. This month, we want you to tell a friend about a podcast you think they'll really love. If they don't know how to listen or to subscribe, you can walk them through the steps. The Tripod hashtag has a ton of great recommendations if you are looking for inspiration. And be sure to share yours, too. That's Tripod, T-R-Y-Pod. Happy listening. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We're talking today with NPR congressional reporter Scott Detrow and longtime former AP reporter in Vermont, Dave Graham. They're helping us look at where Bernie Sanders stands in national politics these days. Our junior senator is in Vermont today and tomorrow. He's making several stops around the state, interacting with constituents and perhaps the media for a change. Some argue his focus has been on the nation of late, not specifically on Vermont. But for many Bernie supporters in Vermont, as we're hearing, that is A-OK. How do you feel and what are you seeing in terms of the role Bernie Sanders plays in national politics right now? Post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Donna in South Burlington says Bernie's popularity with the far left and those who want a more social-oriented government is not going to help the Democrats win back seats in Washington, D.C. The national election has, like it or not, focused attention on reducing government's role in our lives, quite the opposite of what Bernie wants. Cindy says, I think Bernie remains true to his ideals and message, which still feels fully grounded in his relationship to us, his constituents. What I wonder as he moves forward with his task to try to engage Democratic voter energy is how he's going to manage. There are tensions resulting from the continued reluctance of the establishment Democratic leadership to value the progressive voters within the party who are disheartened and angry about that. And Mark says, honestly, spending his time in Vermont speaking is basically just preaching to the choir. He can get more done on a national stage now than by always coming home to Vermont, just as long as he doesn't forget who put him in D.C. to begin with. And let's go to our calls. Jill is on the line from Middlebury. This is Jill Charbonneau, president of the state AFL-CIO. Jill, what's your perspective?
No, I feel like the message of Bernie really resonates with Vermonters. And when you see 20,000 people in Montpelier for the Women's March without the promise of Bernie, but standing tall for all the human rights issues that he stands for, you know, he's doing the work. People here resonate. I've never seen that size crowd in Vermont before. And that's because we believe in the message, and I think it's important. I mean, you look at the Medicare dilemma coming up, a $20 million shortfall. All three of our congressmen stand shoulder to shoulder on this, but we need the help of other representatives in the United States, and going out there and getting this support is going to help Vermonters. I would also like to add that Bernie's travels before he was a presidential candidate really went unnoticed. Bernie has been beating the tom-toms for a long time. And I would also like to say it's been my experience that Vermonters are not suffering because Bernie is out there. I've called his office on issues and they've gotten back to me within a couple of hours. So I think that he's serving all of us. And thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, Jill, thanks for your perspective. Let's go to Naomi in Moncton. Hi, Naomi. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I also agree that I think it's really important for him to do what he can nationally. I come from a long line of Democrats, and I have to say that Bernie is much closer to the Democratic Party that I remember when I was young. And the Democratic Party, as it now stands, has moved way to the right. I do not support it at all. I certainly support Bernie. And whatever he can do to reform it, I think is worth it for the party, whether he is considered to be a Democrat or not. I think the Democratic Party needs help. So I'm fully behind whatever he's doing. And I think the Democratic Party needs to really reconsider its position.
Naomi, thanks for your call. We'll get one more in here from Stephen in Glens Falls, New York. Hi, Stephen. I'd love to hear what you're thinking.
Hi. I think that the old guard Democrats in Washington, D.C. really need to listen to Bernie and realize that he has tapped into a sentiment in the American population, especially among the young people, that we're tired with things remaining the same or nothing really changing, just a little bit of tinkering around the edges. And also, we're tired of our conversation being marginalized by those same Democrats, having them say, we don't know what we're talking about, or we're just a fringe group. We're not a fringe group. We may be, I mean, this whole new surge in grassroots activism and involvement that I'm even seeing in the North Country of New York State, we may be successful in throwing the Republicans out in 2018, but we're going to hold the Democrats accountable also.
Stephen, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate hearing from you. Scott Detrow, NPR congressional correspondent, is on the line with us from Washington. You're hearing a lot of sentiments here from people who are supporters of Bernie Sanders, but still have some frustration with the Democrats. And I'm curious what you think about this sort of internal rift with people who may have considered themselves Democrats, people who support Bernie Sanders, and where this then pushes the Democratic Party, or if they're just sort of paying lip service to Bernie Sanders because he has this popular support.
Yeah, I think this is one of the areas where a lot of Democrats in the Senate have some frustration with Bernie Sanders and with the movement that he's put together, because, you know, the increased engagement is kind of a double-edged sword in their view, because they're really excited that a lot of grassroots organization is taking place. They're really excited that people are showing up and protesting President Trump in large numbers. But I think there's a lot of worry from other members of the Democratic caucus that the expectations are not matched with reality, and that just the process of governing is more nuanced than a lot of people realize. I mean, there was a lot of frustration early on that Democrats weren't opposing President Trump as much as they wanted them to. They wanted, you know, filibusters and rejections of every single Trump nominee for the cabinet, things like that. And I think one example was kind of the earlier national security picks that were approved by high bipartisan numbers, like Secretary Mattis. A lot of Democrats in the Senate were saying, you know, we want people like Mattis in the cabinet to keep President Trump in check, who are professional, who know what they're doing, because they have a lot of concerns about, you know, national security and the Trump administration and the ways they'll go with that. But they were getting massive blowback, massive calls into their offices. And I feel like they felt like some of the people calling in didn't quite understand how governing actually works and how sometimes you do need to do things just to keep the government running, and you can't, you know, filibuster and yell at all points in time. So I think that's one way where Democrats are happy to have the enthusiasm, but sometimes wish that their calls, their phones wouldn't be flooded at all points in time on all issues.
We got a note from Joy, who says Bernie's campaign revealed that he was nothing but a delivery system for Hillary. He did not fight for delegates, even when polling showed he, not Hillary, had the better chance to beat Trump. I supported Bernie from the beginning, but now I feel like he's making a fool of himself. He needs to do the job for which he was hired and stop running around messaging. What has he truly accomplished? And let's hear from Anna, calling in from Rutland. Hi, Anna. Where do you stand?
Well, I've always been a Bernie supporter, always. Until he got on the national stage and had his followers say to follow Clinton, he lost me. I think he lost the whole country. And he could have been president, and he let it go. And I just want to know why.
Yeah, Anna, I can even hear the emotion in your voice now. This is something that you still feel strongly about. And Dave Graham, what about that? I mean, there are people who are really frustrated and angry at this whole situation. And there is some blame that many people place directly on the shoulders of Bernie Sanders.
Well, I think they have reason, and that they are raising a good point, which is that for all of this activism that he has represented over the past, really, throughout his career, but especially on the national stage in the past couple of years, you know, we now have a Republican juggernaut in control of all of Washington and most state legislatures, and whatever the progressive forces in the country have been trying to do, it's not working. And you know, I think one of the things you're going to see in the next couple of years is the Democratic Party really having, you know, to do some serious soul searching about what its own future looks like and whether it wants to be, you know, take on this more progressive left-leaning profile, or whether it wants to be, you know, this party that is more concerned with governing and with trying to make sure that the Republicans in Washington don't take it and go too far off the rails or whatever. I think it's a tough conundrum for a lot of Democrats. And I also think it's not helped by, I mean, coming to a solution there is not helped by the fact that because Bernie's never been a Democrat, you know, back from his early days in Vermont of calling the two parties Tweedledee and Tweedledum, a lot of Democrats feel bitter about that, frankly, that he's never been able to say, I am really a Democrat and I'm willing to join the party and work with it. And yes, maybe try to push it to the left some, but first I'm a Democrat. And so that's a real difficulty for him. And I think the folks who are criticizing his real effectiveness at the bottom line have reason. They have a legitimate point to make there.
You know, Scott Detrow, I know you don't want to speculate on what might happen in 2020, but we got a note from James who says, aren't Bernie Sanders' presidential prospects compromised by some skeletons in the closet? My recollection is that Bernie failed to disclose his finances in the past presidential race, filing for an extension twice and then exiting the race without disclosing. And his campaign advertising was run through a privately held ad agency in Bethesda, Maryland, that turns out to have been owned by a friend of his wife's, leaving people wondering if there were kickbacks, and the circumstances of his wife's departure from Burlington College was never fully explained. These things tend to come out in a presidential election. So, Dave Graham, I'll turn to you. I mean, we don't know if Bernie is planning to run again, but, you know, people will certainly know him better, and perhaps that ability that either the media has to interrogate someone or that the opposition has to take a candidate seriously and interrogate him and find those skeletons, as James says, would be happening much sooner if he were to run again.
I think there may be some truth to that, although, a lot of that, to the extent it was scandalous, has already been out. I mean, and it, and frankly, you know, when you consider the now incumbent president, the current president's international business relationships, and his you know, having this hotel in Washington where folks are coming to, you know, spend money at his hotel and presumably contribute some profits to him in order to gain access to the high levels of government and so on. I mean, the level of kind of scandal that's out there has just been – it's a very high bar these days to get any attention really or any outrage. And, I you know, the folks might try again, but I don't know that there's really – you know, we, a lot of us in the Vermont media looked into the Burlington College situation. It kind of got to the bottom of it, and it just didn't seem like there was all that much there, frankly.
Scott Detrow,
can I add something to that?
Yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think that's something that's important to think about when you hear the argument that Bernie Sanders would have done a better job than Hillary Clinton. You know, look at the relative approval ratings. I think it's always tough to compare popularity and poll numbers for someone directly running in a race versus someone hypothetically running in a race. Mm-hmm. And you saw that with Hillary Clinton herself. She had 65% plus approval ratings in terms of her national reputation when she was Secretary of State or just retired and was only hypothetically thinking about running in the race. You know, the alternative always looks a lot rosier than the reality, no matter who it is in the hypothetical situation versus the real situation. So I'm not saying that Bernie Sanders wouldn't run a competitive race, but I think some of his numbers would automatically come down if he was ever the general election candidate just because of the nature of the process.
Well, you know, leaving aside any future presidential run, what about, you know, do you have a sense from other politicians who have seen this sort of popularity rise, if this is lasting or likely to be lasting for Bernie Sanders? Is this a new role that he feels comfortably and can look to as his future in the Democratic Party? Or, you know, are we seeing a spike that will then sort of have the long tail in Washington but fade away?
I mean, I think that'll be something to keep an eye on, but I think certainly Sanders has cemented himself in terms of official position in the Democratic caucus, but also just the more symbolic high-profile role in terms of outreach, in terms of just the big network of people he can organize and ask to help in one issue or another. I mean, I don't think he fades away anytime soon.
That's Scott Detrow, NPR's congressional reporter. He joined us from NPR's radio booth at the U.S. Senate. Thanks very much, Scott. And David Graham was a longtime reporter for the Associated Press here in Vermont. He's been with us in our Montpelier studio today. Always a pleasure to talk with you, Dave.
Glad to do it. Thank you.
Coming up, there are a lot of things you can do with maple, but there are some things you just should not. Stay tuned. This is Vermont Edition.
Water.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. That voice you're hearing is Maria Lisa Calta. She is a cookbook author and Vermonter, and we have asked her in for a very special task today. Okay, look, I know we all like maple. If there was such a thing as a state syrup, maple would certainly be Vermont's official flavor. And we have found ways to add maple to almost anything. Maple butter, maple biscuits, maple yogurt. Heck, we even put maple syrup on snow, add a pickle and a donut, and call it a meal. But people, listen to me. Not everything is good with maple. So Maria Lisa Calta is here today to offer some advice to us for when to steer clear of maple flavoring in your food and to share some failed recipes, as well as give us a gentle shove in the right direction. Maria Lisa, nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you, Jane. It's great to be here.
Why can't maple just go with anything? I mean, we love maple.
We do love maple, but we don't love it on everything. I was thinking about this a lot, of course, today and days prior, and I realized that I think it was about in the 80s when it was sort of the first whiff of a local war movement where every fancy restaurant in Vermont would show that it was in Vermont by pouring maple syrup on everything. And I remember a couple of memorable meals at quite high-end places. I remember a duck breast that just had maple syrup poured over it. I think it was supposed to be sort of like duck l'orange, but with duck a la maple. It was just horrible.
Just because it was too sweet? I mean, was that the problem?
It was just way too sweet. And I think they just poured the syrup over. So the texture was – you know, it didn't go with the duck at all. It was disgusting. Chicken was a frequent target of badly used maple syrup. I myself had tried basting chicken and turkey with just straight maple syrup. Burn the skin, disaster. Pork, which actually pairs very well with maple, has also been an unfortunate victim. I looked at some old recipes from the first Vermont. It was called the Official Maple Cookbook by the Department of Agriculture. And I found some recipes looked really good. Maple muffins, a little maple in your apple pie. There was a maple sugar cherry ring made with refrigerator biscuits, maple syrup, and maraschino cherries. Beef tongue in a sweet and sour sauce made with maple syrup.
I don't know if you have me on that one.
Canned peaches stuffed with ground ham that had been flavored with maple. Something called Vermont baked lima beans, and the Vermont part was that it had a lot of maple syrup in it. I remember when there was a first distiller in Vermont, in Waterbury, back in the early 90s. I think they did a great gin. It was called Vermont Distillers. They're no relation to the current place that's called Vermont Distillers. They did a great gin with cucumber, and they did a maple liqueur called Tamarack that sort of tasted, I'm sorry, but sort of like paint thinner, not really.
So there's a broad spectrum. But, you know, Marie-Lisa, one of the things that you just said was pork is a frequent target of maple, and the flavors pair well together. So what's the problem then with using maple on chicken or pork, where it might actually be fine as a flavoring, but not particularly good for cooking with, I take it?
Well, I think the problem is that it's a sugar and it burns easily. So and it's also really, really sweet. So you want to cut it always with an acid. Jack Pickett up in Stowe made a magic sauce, which was two parts balsamic vinegar and one part maple syrup. And he uses that to roast vegetables, and it's really delicious. Cut it with some lemon, some orange juice. A little bit of fat works well to keep it kind of – help it sort of melt over whatever you're cooking. So I think that's the way to do it. Also, to think about what you're doing.
Right. Don't just throw it on there because you like the flavor or it's Vermont.
Right. Do you really want your chicken to be, you know, that sweet? So you just have to – you know, a little moderation.
Yeah. Well, which is probably good advice for any of us at any point. You know, you told us about a lot of different ways that maple has been used badly. And listeners, I would love to hear how you have used maple badly. We'll keep a list. You can post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. We'll put a link up there for you to share your worst maple. In fact, we already have one. And, you know, you could tell us how you think maple has been used badly. I actually am not trying to skirt the issue. I can't think of a time that I've used maple and thought, whoops, that was the wrong way to go. Have you ever used it in a way, not that the cooking part was bad because it burned, but in a way that you thought, oh, that was a terrible flavor pairing?
No, but Steve Bogart, the chef who started the Single Pebble, told me he was recently in Queens at a Sichuan restaurant that he said was amazing. But they ordered a Kung Pao chicken, and there were four people at the table, at least two of them Vermonters. They all took a bite, and they said, maple syrup? And he said, it was not good.
So people are still doing
this. Yes, people are still doing it wrong. So I think other than burning it and burning the turkey on Thanksgiving with the nice maple glaze, I don't think I've ever actually used it where I thought it was really a disaster.
Well, we are in the maple season, despite the particularly cold weather we're having, you know, right now. So people are thinking maple. Do you have tips for us on the right ways to use maple or to think of it as a flavor pairing with food?
Well, you know, again, if you cut it with a citrus or an acid of some sort, you know, I think the highest use of maple syrup is on pancakes and waffles and oatmeal. And then, of course, the maple creamy.
Of course.
There's nothing wrong with that, with, you know, just leaving it at its purest form. But I think also it's great in baking. And I'm not skilled enough baker. I know you, I should have looked this up, but to how to substitute.
Use it for sugar.
Because it's a liquid and there's differences. But
I'm sure that's easily Googleable.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, a little in your maple pie, your muffins. I have a granola recipe that I love that takes dark maple syrup. So, you know, I think mostly it's, you know, just think about this. Would you dump sugar in this on your chicken? No. How much maple do you want to put on there, or your fish? Although I've had great salmon with a maple glaze.
Yeah, see, so there is but you would put a sugary substance on a salmon, so that makes sense.
But a slightly sugary substance.
So I think what we're going to take from this is Marie-Elise's point about everything in moderation, and Vermonters, I'm sorry to say, that goes for maple syrup too. Marie-Elise Calta is a cookbook author and food writer, among other things, and we do have some of her recipes. We will post them for you all to enjoy. Thank you so much for being with us again today.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. Want to share your thoughts with us? Leave a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or on Facebook, or tweet us at Vermont Edition. And be sure to follow Vermont Edition in NPR One to make sure you get our latest content. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Jake Rusnak directed the show. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. And our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.